You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, this is Tommy from Between the Baird and Me, and you're listening to Lamb Goat Van Flip Podcast.
What's good, Goat Flippy Flippers? It's your host, Lurk, here, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. If this is your first time here, we welcome you to the Van Flip, and if not, thank you for coming back. If you are listening to us on a platform that you can give us a rating, just go ahead and give us a 5-star thumbs up or whatever the highest thing you can. It definitely helps us out in the algorithm of the podcast world, and while you're at it, you should go ahead and share us with your friends. Visit lambgoat.com to stay up to date on news, releases, and announcements from around the hardcore and metal world. Follow Lamb Goat on social media, give us a like on Facebook, and follow Lamb Goat on both Twitter and Instagram at Lamb Goat. We also have a Twitter account for the podcast, so you can better interact with us directly. Follow at Van Flip Podcast, tweet us what you think of the show or who the next guest we should have on. If you are interested in watching podcasts instead of listening, all of our episodes are available to watch on the Lamb Goat YouTube channel, so head over there and subscribe and make sure you get notified when new episodes are released. I would like to take a quick second to thank our Patreon supporters, Dylan and Lachlan. You guys rock, and thank you for supporting the Van Flip. If you would like to become a Patreon supporter, not only do you help improve and grow the show, but you also get early access to episodes before they are released, an invite to the private Discord chat, Lamb Goat swag, and more. We will even shout you out for as long as you are a supporter. Visit patreon.com/vanflip for more info. On this episode of the podcast, we were lucky enough to head down to Orlando and meet up with Tommy and Paul from Between the Baird and Me. This podcast was done on their tour bus, so you may hear their AC unit in the background. I tried to take it out as much as possible, so apologies ahead of time.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is stuff. Oh no. Lamb Goat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
Can we get you on?
Cool deal.
All right, guys. Well, we are back with another episode of the Van Flip Podcast, and I am joined by Tommy and Paul of Between the Baird and Me.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
No problem. Thanks for coming on the bus today. That was great of you guys to join us on the Lamb Goat bus.
We live on this thing, so.
Yes, it is your tour bus. Yeah, that's true. rented. So what I wanted to kind of kick things off, because you guys have been around forever and ever, so I'm sure you've done a lot of these, not podcasts, but interview-type situations before. What's the lamest kind of questions you guys get off like, all the time?
I think the usual, like, what? Where's the band name from?
The question I hate the most, honestly, is, like, when people say, hey, what, tell some crazy tour stories or something like that.
We don't have a lot of them.
Because we don't have a lot of them, and then it's not that the question's lame, it's that it makes us feel lame, which is, we're like, damn, we don't really... Gosh, we suck, you know?
There's not a lot of cool metal stories you guys could tell, huh?
Not really, you know?
Little things, but yeah.
There's probably a correlation to, like, the cooler the stories you have as a band, likely the shorter your career is going to be.
True.
If you get involved in too much nefarious shit, you're probably going to break up eventually or, you know, something.
Yeah, so I'll just remove those from my
questions. Here's my biggest pet peeve as far as a question is inspiration.
Like, for your...
To write a song. Like, okay. What inspires you to write? It's like, inspiration is such a broad term.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can never answer that. I'm like, I don't know. It depends literally day to day. It could be, you know, walking to get a coffee.
You just answered the question.
Yeah. I know.
I think
they're like, what band? You know, because in people's minds, they're like, you listen to a band, you're like, I want to write a song like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like, that's not really how it is.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe some people, but I don't
know. People not in a band, they probably think that, but when you've actually done it.
Like, what band do you listen to when you're writing? Like, I don't really listen while I'm writing.
And and plus, you guys listen, I'm assuming every member of your band listens to a wide variety of eclectic stuff, because you can kind of tell within your music, so.
Yeah, for sure. All right,
well, I'll take that one off the list. No, just because one of the questions was, you know, because you guys do have a wide array of, like, sound in each album and stuff like that, plus your songs are longer than, you know, your average.
And, you know, it's not that the question sucks. It's just it's such a it's just hard to answer. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's hard to answer it in a succinct or concise way, you know what I mean? So, it's just every time I, you know, we hear that question, it's like, oh, God, here we go again. You know?
Start making up random stuff to tell
you
them.
You do, yeah. I mean,
and something we've been doing, like, next year will be 20 years of being a band. When people ask, like, how do you write a song? That's changed a lot in 20 years.
Yeah, I bet dramatically.
It changes every year.
Yeah, every time.
And I think individually it changes with each of us, the way we do things, you know, so.
Well, for you.
It's just an ever evolving, you know, question that we can't ever really answer.
You also get better and worse at it as time goes, and or, you know, at worse at certain things and whatnot. But it's got to be vastly different from you guys' previous band before Between the Baird and Me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Prayer for Cleansing and whatnot. So I'm sure your writing is completely different.
Oh, yeah.
How old were you guys when you were in that band? I mean, you must have been like teenagers, right?
Yeah. Paul was in it before. Paul started the band.
Yeah. I mean, I was like
late.
18 or something, you know?
Yeah, I was 19 when I was
20. Were you guys still in
23 years 18. Ago? Yeah.
High school, college, when you guys formed in 2000? The Between the Baird and Me?
I was college dropout.
Yeah, we just, yeah. I think first year of college, bro.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think you were in Raleigh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went one semester.
All right, yeah. Because I think I was like in last year high school when you guys just started coming out. Once you guys were touring and whatnot, I was out of school, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, and talking about writing, it's cool to think. Because we did An Evening Within Europe recently, and we played a song off that first album. And I would catch myself on stage kind of just thinking about, you know, how we wrote that song and how we, you know, we didn't have any recording equipment. It would just be us literally sitting in our apartment, like, just memorizing the riffs and like, what's the next part? Okay. And it's so different now.
It's got to be hard memorizing Between the Baird and Me songs in general.
It's just cool to think about how we used to write compared to now. Because now it's very, very calculated.
Yeah. And also back then it was mostly me and Tommy just writing everything, you know. Now everybody writes. So I guess it's much more collaborative amongst all five members now.
That's cool. And you guys still big Counting Crows fans?
See, that's a thing. No.
I pictured Mr. Jones playing in the background.
I think they're a great band, but I wouldn't say I keep track of their newer material or anything.
Yeah, it was more of a joke question than anything.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, I don't want to discredit. I mean, they are a good band.
You know, I care what they do.
Interesting sound.
I judge bands by the ratio of good and bad, and I would say their ratio is not too good in my book.
Not too
good. But they've also had a very long.
They have some really good songs and albums, but I would say most, in my opinion, from my personal taste.
They did the Put Up the Parking Lot, right? That was one of their songs.
Yeah, they didn't write that one.
Put Up the Parking Lot.
That was
I don't like that song.
Who wrote that song? Joni Mitchell. That's a Joni Mitchell song.
Oh, okay.
They covered it, maybe.
Okay, nice. So let's switch gears off the Counting Crows. one song
that's one of the questions we don't like.
That's why I had to bring it up. I knew you guys didn't like probably the band name question, so I just wanted to like make light of that. But one of the things I posted on Instagram that we were having you guys on, and we had people like write in, you know, like, hey, what do you want to ask Between the Baird and Me? One of them that I thought was quite funny was, what the fuck is a Selkie?
Shit, I don't remember.
Wasn't it from some sort of like? I remember you told me one time. It was like.
It's some
Irish
like
folk.
Yeah, it's some made up creature that can, you know, walk on land and swim. And
okay,
like amphibious.
Amphibious. Yeah. Creatures.
Interesting.
The problem with lyrics is I've written a lot. Going back to 2005 and thinking about that song, I remember that song was about like children and being able to, you know, not judge one another, and they just come together naturally, and how we grow out of that, or basically turn into pieces of shit.
We're taught that, you mean?
Yeah, taught that. Yeah, exactly. So that I know that was the kind of the motive behind writing that song.
Cool. So, like you said, you guys have been doing this thing for quite some time. We're coming up on 20 years next year. Do you have any like big plans as far as next year goes? Whether it's a new release or a 20th anniversary tour?
I mean, there's things we're kind of trying to figure out right now. Nothing's solidified or anything.
Yeah, we're actually probably right. You know, we're kind of in the process of trying to figure out the next steps.
How far in advance do you guys plan? Because you usually tour with like an album for a year plus.
Yeah,
you know, so
we normally plan pretty far out. We may have some things planned, but we're not going to talk about it.
Damn it!
I mean, in a nutshell, though, I mean, any band, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's all cyclical, so it's like, you write an album, you tour for 2 years. You write another album, you tour for 2 years, so.
Do you ever set, like...
It's no mystery that probably next, you know, we're winding down on a tour cycle right now, so it's kind of like the next thing is around the corner, which does require a lot of planning and strategizing and stuff like that. So we're, like, just now starting that process, but it's hard because we're like still on tour, so it's hard to get in that mindset of like thinking about the future when you're just kind of still in the throes of this.
Do you guys write on the bus at all or anything like that?
I do normally. This tour I've been really bad about it, but yeah, I try to write a lot.
Do you write are you still doing side stuff do you write both. To that at all?
Yeah.
I would say
most of my solo material I write on tour and some BT band stuff.
Cool. I should guess, since we already talked about Prayer for Cleansing, I might as well just knock this question out too. They've been asking when they can expect, if they can expect, any kind of Prayer for Cleansing material and or anything from that.
We've honestly not thought about it.
Not thought about it, but interestingly, somebody was telling, or no, I was talking to, we played Raleigh the other day and Jimmy Chang came to the show. Jimmy did a stint in Prayer for Cleansing. He played in Undying. He plays in Sect. And he's like very still immersed in like the hardcore world.
Is that a workout term?
Work a little detached from it, although, you know, obviously that's like our roots and stuff. But he was like, dude, like everybody loves like the 90s hardcore stuff right now.
Hardcore stuff.
And I'm like, really?
It's a big swing right now, yeah.
And so I'm like, man, maybe you strike while the iron's hot here, get a prayer, but probably not. If I had to learn all this, I mean, Tommy would have to teach me the song. I don't remember any of that stuff. Like, my brain.
It's a lifetime ago, almost.
It's a lifetime ago. It's like, yeah, it's crazy.
But to put it this way, we have got, as far as I know, zero offers to do anything.
Yeah, nobody's. Okay.
We haven't turned down anything.
No.
At this point.
For anyone listening.
But we still know all the guys.
We like money.
You know?
Money helps a lot. Yeah. Money helps.
But,
that definitely helps.
But yeah, we still know all the guys. I mean, everybody's doing their own thing now, but
yeah,
we, you know,
not that you would know this problem, you probably wouldn't know this question, but I think when we talked to Jamie last time, Jamie King, obviously, you know, a friend of yours, he maybe mentioned that Glass Casket was maybe writing some stuff or had been writing
stuff.
They've
been talking about that for like 15 years now.
Yeah,
I cannot imagine. I mean,
and again, you're like probably not the best two to ask.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, you had to pry Blake away from, you know, Fortnite. And whatever other shit he's got going on.
Is he a big streamer? Or just plays it just for himself?
He just plays it a lot. I don't know. I'm just giving him a hard time. I don't know if they would do... I don't know if they do anything or not. I mean, I feel like they're always talking about doing stuff.
I think they like to talk about doing it. I don't know if it actually happens.
It's like more into talking about it instead of doing it.
Yeah. They were great.
Yeah,
that's how we recruited Dusty and Blake.
Yeah.
Because we played shows with them and we're like, damn, these guys are... good, you know.
Yeah,
we didn't realize how young they were at the time.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Remember we asked, you know, when Will quit the band, we were like, oh, I should get Blake, and we called him up and we found out he was like a junior in high school or somewhere. Like, oh
yeah, because we had a tour booked with God Forbid.
Oh yeah,
at that time I think we had to cancel because we didn't have a drummer. I called Blake and he's like, I can't, I'm in high school,
I have sixth period to go to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's crazy. Off topic here, but about you guys. One of the first times I saw you and Glass Casket play together was this really small and I would say crappy festival.
Was it with Beloved?
They may have been there. A lot of bands were
That's
there.
Probably part of that. It was probably part of that North Carolina.
You may not have toured, but you definitely played this little festival and there was like a group of, like groups of bands there.
Yeah.
Bunny Fest? I don't know if you remember that.
Oh yeah, I remember Bunny Fest.
Okay.
Was
that
outside?
Yes.
Yeah.
At like a dock?
Augusta,
it could have been
Georgia.
Like a dock, something like that.
Yeah, it was right around the river.
Yeah.
That was a course, I drove, I think we had to drive like 6 hours or 7 hours to get to that.
I remember that show. Trivium played, God Forbid played, I think.
Evergreen Terrace was there because they were from Jacksonville. Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I remember those shows more than I remember, you know, the last
shows
few
on
years.
This tour. Yeah.
Were those, is that because it's like more fun? Because you were like in a younger band and like you were just younger
also
in general?
You're just it's new. It's like every experience is like very exciting. Like I'm sure that was the first time we ever played next to a river, you know what I mean? Or whatever. And
now everything's very routine.
Yeah, you play the same places all the time.
Back then you didn't have a sound check at a certain time. You didn't have, everything that our day-to-day involves.
Or sound check at all.
Every day was completely different. You just kind of show up and sometimes it was smooth, sometimes it was total chaos.
I guess it makes the experience a lot more like memorable,
which I'm glad we lived through all that. I wouldn't want to do that now.
Rough it?
Yeah.
Yeah, no roughing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is pretty rough.
Yeah.
Compared, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, what caused you guys to reach out to them outside of them, to Glass Casket, to Blake and Dusty, obviously? Was it just because they were kind of like a local band around you guys, but you
were
also really good?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I mean, I guess in those days.
We were kind of in a dire situation.
At least at that time, too. I mean, it's a lot different now. Everybody like shreds now. But back then, it was like kind of hard to find like competent musicians to play what we were playing at the time, which was fairly complex stuff. So we were like, oh, these guys are from the same state and they can probably play this stuff, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, that's definitely what made us want to get them involved, you know?
What do you think it is about, like, North Carolina that just is kind of like the hotbed for, like, metalcore, metal stuff? Because a lot of bands that are in the scene and a lot of bands that are still active are kind of from, not your area, but just, like, North Carolina in general.
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, there's groups of people that kind of did a lot. I mean, like, down in Charlotte, there was, you know, Day of Suffering, and from there spawned, you know, there was Undying and Prayer for Cleansing. It was all a small, very small group of people.
Some of it happened in parallel, which I think is kind of crazy, because, like, Undying was in Raleigh, Prayer was in Charlotte, and we kind of started around the same time.
Yeah.
And we were both, like, unbeknownst to each other, were, like, kind of doing this, like, metalcore thing and doing guitar harmonies and stuff like that, very inspired by, like, kind of European melodic metal combined with like sort of hardcore, you know, stuff. And then, you know, yeah, that kind of happened in parallel. And then it was like, oh, you guys are doing that too? We're doing it too. And then, yeah, just kind of like became this like breeding ground for that kind of stuff. But yeah, a lot of people probably haven't heard of them, but Day of Suffering was definitely like a huge part of that. They were from Wilmington, North Carolina, and they were just doing that like, you know, thrashy, like, Slayer thing, like, fast.
It's like kind of metal hardcore riffs. Before that was...
You know, they weren't around for very long. I think they're actually...
They started metalcore.
Oh, metalcore, sorry.
But they started doing that, and then, you know, we were definitely kind of inspired by that, and then next thing you know, like... And then, like, you know, Unearth was kind of starting to do that kind of thing up in the Northeast, and...
I just remember as a kid, I also, as a older teenager, younger 20s, whatever, because I'm up there with you guys in age. I remember I had my own little zine, if you want to call it, and I remember finding all these bands and like, oh, of course, North Carolina. They're just from North Carolina. Like, you know, even like you said, Beloved's coming back there from there, and, you know, so it's just crazy that a lot of those bands kind of came from that area, you know? It's like one of those things where, like, they'll go back one day and talk about grunge, you know, and how, like, all the bands you know that are super huge were like all
from
bros,
Seattle,
in the same little area. So it's like, it's funny and interesting how when you talk to people that are involved in it, that's how it is all the time.
Honestly, it's just kind of unexpected. Like, you wouldn't think that North Carolina would be the place where all that or a lot of it was happening. You know, you would expect it in a different place. So
must be all the cigarettes and moonshine. So what was, I mean, obviously the goal when you start a band isn't necessarily to be like, make it big, make it rich.
No.
Did you guys ever like fathom 20 years later you'd still be here?
No.
No.
I mean, we've never been a band. I mean, even now we don't really look that far ahead. You know, I think we've always kind of just taken it one thing at a time. And I mean, I know when we started, we probably, I don't know, I mean, me personally, I was like, we'll probably do a few records and hopefully people will care. And yeah, it just kind of kept going and going. And before you know it, it's been 20 years.
Yeah. Like, blink your eyes. Back then, you have no, I mean, like, we were young and
nobody made money back then.
Yeah, you didn't make any
money. There was no such thing as a band that.
I mean, is anyone making money now?
I mean, you're getting by, you know, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. You know, we're fortunate enough to just, like, make a living doing it, but yeah. It's definitely like, you know, if it all ended today, like, I gotta look for a job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like we've been
so you guys,
it.
This is basically like your full-time gig, though. There's no, like,
yeah.
I mean, you might have studio work on the side because you guys probably are plugged into that scene, but you're full-time Between the Buried and Me members, no side jobs?
No.
Not really. I mean,
just music stuff. Yeah. Paul does some coffee. Coffee stuff.
Yeah, I've got like a coffee business back home, but
okay, cool.
Know, that's not like, you know, I wouldn't be able to depend on that right now for
a passion project. For the most
yeah,
part.
Passion project. Hopefully, it's something I can fall back on when and if this ever the wheels fall off of this thing. But you know, I think we all want to do this for as long as we can.
Yeah, until the wheels fall off.
Yeah,
I don't drink coffee at all. I've never gotten into it.
I'm gonna get you.
That's what I'm
gonna get you into it. There's a fantastic place down the road, by the way.
Not Starbucks?
No, it's not Starbucks. It's called Deeply Coffee. It, like, blew my mind. It was really good.
Coffee? Do you have Orlando, his coffee?
Yeah, it's got great coffee.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's pretty good.
Do you want to plug it?
Nightflyerroastworks.com. Go to the website, order some beans.
I heard bat droppings is a big problem with, or is
bat droppings.
Yeah.
They don't grow coffee in caves.
No, I know, but there was fecal matter in the beans or something like that. I don't know. I read
if
that
if there
somewhere.
Is, they clean all that shit out, literally.
Good.
I don't know anything about that.
No,
I mean, there's some weird, like,
that, I'm sure.
No. All ours is, like, we source, like, specialty coffee. There is a thing that people, you probably heard people talk about, like, it's called Kopi Luwak. It's, like, an Indonesian coffee where they essentially feed, like, coffee cherries to these civet cats.
Yes,
and
that's
and
what
they
it is.
Shit them out, and they use they process those seeds for coffee. But that's, like, in the specialty coffee world, that's a bit taboo. It's unethical, and so we don't fuck around with that. But people will talk about it, and they're like, have this civet cat shit. Why would you want to drink that?
Yeah, the way you're describing it doesn't make me want to try it at all.
It's literally been digested by a cat. You know, it's like, why would you want that?
Yeah, so. And I'm sure when they're talking about stuff like that, it's massively, massively produced coffee rather than, like, select boutique kind of.
Right, operation. I mean, if something like that is something that they stumbled across by accident because they were like, all these civets eat coffee cherries, and they were like, they would gather up the feces and, like, let's try this because they shit the bean out from the seed. And then they're like, let's try this coffee. And then it became, like, this boutique thing. And now they go and capture these fucking things and put them in cages. And it becomes this totally, you know, like anything else. Humanity just bastardizes everything. And now it's an awful, awful thing. And they charge all this money for it. And stupid tourists probably were like, oh, this is, let's get the authentic Indonesian experience here. And it's obviously, it's probably not very good. And it's.
Never tried it?
No, I would never. I've smelled it. I was at a cafe in China one time that had it. I was like, I'll smell it.
The first person to try it must have been out
of
mind.
It smelled pretty good, I'll be honest with you. But no, I didn't drink it.
Mm, interesting.
Not interested.
So the first couple records that you guys put out, you know, Silent Circus, stuff like that, Alaska, you kind of had the more abrasive, you know, hardcore metal sound. Then when you started, JP was speculating on the way down here, when you met Jamie, you kind of changed your sound. I don't know if I would agree with him per se, but does that have anything to do with just the way you guys went for it after Alaska with Colors and everything like that?
No, I wouldn't say meeting Jamie, I wouldn't say it changed the sound, but
maybe the way you were recording it, I don't know.
I feel like we learned a lot anatomy of the cover record we did. I think just trying so many different kinds of music within that album, just learning how to actually record the different sounds and everything, I think that really inspired us to be like, oh, maybe we could possibly do some other things. And, you know, this stuff is exciting as well. It's all in our DNA. I mean, we had new members around, you know, at Alaska, and, like, everybody, they have different things, and you know, in their DNA, and, you know, we just kind of, I would say it was just a natural evolution. It wasn't anything we really planned out, or it happened because of Jamie.
Yeah,
especially.
I mean, Jamie's always just tried to help us achieve whatever we were trying to do.
Yeah, I didn't know he was like a producer type.
No, I mean, I would say he's like, you know, a co-producer, but yeah. He's not the type of guy that's going to try to change the direction of what you're doing. Yeah. He's going to try to say, okay, this is what you want to do. Let's try to make that happen in the best way possible. I mean, he's done that ever since we recorded our first demo with him. You know what I mean? Even though that music to him at the time was probably pretty foreign, you know, he was like, what the hell are you guys doing? You know,
this is a new metal.
But you know, a lot of it is just growth as people, you know, back then we were young, we were trying to write just crazy stuff, you know, abrasive, atonal at times, like, and then sort of temper it with some melodic stuff. But as time has gone on, you know, again, with the new members and, you know, there's just at certain points in your career, you do start shifting gears a little bit. And, we started moving towards just a slightly more stripped down songwriting process, trying to do more with less as opposed to just cramming a bazillion riffs into a song and writing. You know, we were no longer trying to like blow people's minds with how crazy the music
was.
We're just trying to make it a little more, you know, I don't want to say more listenable, but like just, you know, songs that are more reflective of where we're at in life and as musicians, like where we've kind of grown to. So, but that's just a natural thing. I mean, every band's done that, for better or worse. Metallica does that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Metallica did that. You know, some people hate it. Some people are okay with it, you know, but.
Newer Metallica you talk about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, they're not going to sound like what they sounded like in 1987.
But it's genuine, you know? At least. You know, I feel like albums should represent the band in that moment, you know, and I feel like when I look back at our entire catalog, even though I'm not 100%, I don't love everything we've done, it sounds genuine to where we were. You know, I think back to, you know, when we were writing and what the kind of music we wanted to write, and it's all very genuine. We never have been like forcing ourselves to really fit in a certain place or write a certain kind of album. And that's what I'm most proud of, I guess, is just that everything sounds very genuine to where we were as musicians. And still to this day, I think we're writing literally what naturally is coming to us.
Okay.
We're not really trying to. And like he's saying, Jamie's just always been great to help us achieve. Like, he kind of sees what we want and how we are as musicians and how the song sound at that moment, and he just caters to it. And we've all been growing. I mean, because we started working with him when he barely knew what the hell he was doing.
Yeah.
We didn't know what we were doing, so we kind of, it's been a growing process for both of us. And
do you guys plan to use him going forward too?
Say it again?
Do you guys plan to use him continuing going forward? Or?
I mean, we haven't like sat down to talk about it, but yeah, I mean, we love like tracking, especially with him. It's just,
he's like another member of the band at this point.
It's just so comfortable. I mean, the last few records, I mean, it doesn't feel like work, you know, because all, you know, most of our, you know, when it comes to songwriting and recording, most of the real work and just going through everything with a fine tooth comb and all that it's before we get in the studio. Because now you can't record for 6 months. You have to spend all that precious time before you get in the studio. So when it's time to actually walk in the door, we know exactly how the record's going to sound. He's just there to help us achieve, you know, the best sounds we can get.
Yeah, and he put, you know,
that's
he helps
what he's great
you.
At.
I think he's great at, you know, just kind of pushing you that like extra inch, whether it's like harmonizing a lead or throwing an extra vocal harmony on. He's
very musical.
He's very musical, which people probably don't know about him, is that
he's not just the drummer of a new metal band.
He's got a great ear for music. Mm-hmm. Like, he hears, you know, he just hears everything.
I tried to get some dirt
before it's even there, you know.
I tried to get some dirt on you guys from him today, but he didn't reply back in time. So
okay.
I was trying to get some kind of inside weird joke to drop on you guys to kind of like throw you off guard. But I was going to ask you. Well, we're talking about new members and whatnot. Obviously, new members from like years and years
ago.
Yeah,
it's not really new anymore.
Yeah. In the earlier days, you did have some kind of like changes in your lineup frequently.
Yeah.
Was that just mostly because you guys were young, or what has made it that this current state of the band has lasted this long?
Well, you were talking about earlier, like,
for college and stuff like that.
There was a point in our career where it's like, okay, people actually do care. We actually are going to be a full-time band. You know, we're like, all right, so how do we make that happen? And there was only a few of us who wanted to go along with that ride, you know. And we just needed to find people that could handle the stresses of touring. I mean, back then we were touring a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, a whole lot. And you know, you couldn't really have any sort of life outside of this. And, you know, people just didn't want to do it, or they didn't connect with the music the way that, you know, we did. And yeah, well, I mean, once the current lineup we have now, we've had since, what, 2005, 2004, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were they on the Alaska record,
yeah,
or did they record it?
Yeah, we wrote a record.
We wrote with
yeah. I knew you guys changed then, but I didn't know if you had recorded it.
We went through a lot right before that. Like, I mean, there was a point where we were just like, is this ever going to work out? Like, are we going to find
it? I mean, there was a brief period where Tommy and I were the only people in the band.
Yeah.
Mm. We were like, shit, we need three people.
We put some ads out on the street,
pretty much. But
and we really lucked out. You know?
Yeah, and those guys, you know, got us through a certain time. But, you know, once we got like Blake, or once we got Dusty, and then we were able to get Blake on board. I mean, you know, like Blake dropped out of college straight up to join this band. So, you know, when we got these guys, these are the guys that were like, we want to be musicians. We want to be career musicians. And that's what it took at a certain point. Like, before that, you know, you're dealing with people who are like, man, I can't tour. I can't sleep in a van.
Yeah.
And do this, you know. And even now, like, it's such an unstable career, you know. It's like, so, you know, you can imagine when you're sort of in your early 20s, that sort of fork in the road, like, am I going to do this, or am I going to do something where, you know, I've got health benefits and 401k maybe, or something like that, which ain't this world at all. So,
no.
You know, we were just able to weather the storm. Most bands, honestly, are not.
You're right.
It all kind of dissolves around that point. But
especially the bands that came, you know, early 2000s. I feel, though, like we were talking, I don't know, previously with the metalcore and metal art, the hardcore sound is kind of come back in a revival type situation where it's a lot of newer bands are more decent than they have been in the past. But I feel like bands that have weathered the storm for this past, like, 20 years or whatever, I feel like they also will benefit greatly going forward, too. I you know what I mean? Like, how you say career musicians, there might be another 10, 20 years left in the career trajectory going forward, just because the resurgence is there, you know? It just felt like there was a while, you know, 2010 to almost now-ish time, where it was a big lull. I don't know if you guys feel the same way or anything, but...
It just depends on what you consider the lull to be. I mean, I think certain kinds of music there were, but I don't know. I've always been constantly looking for something, not just outside of this world, but, you know, I think music's always been alive and well, and yeah, but I think within that community, it's right now is a great time. I mean, for instance, our merch guy on this tour, he's young, he's 24, he's very in touch with the hardcore scene, and it's cool to kind of get his perspective on it all. And, you know, the fact that, I mean, he knows literally every band we grew up on. I mean,
out before he was born.
The deep cut stuff, you know, it's like, it's crazy. Bands are talking about, you know, Turmoil and, you know, Trial and all these
crazy. It's like the equivalent of me, you know, being his age and being like, Fleetwood Mac, man. Hell yeah. I mean, Fleetwood Mac is awesome, but like, it's just weird to, you know, see.
Yeah, but it's such a smaller scale.
I know,
it's like a band like Fleetwood Mac is like,
of course,
you know,
yeah,
like pop. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's crazy that these bands that, I mean, especially back then, they didn't sell anything. We used to go to the shows, there were 40 people at these shows.
Yeah.
You know,
you had to pass like cassette tapes with one another to find out a band.
It's
and stuff.
It's awesome, man.
I agree with that.
I think it's great that that's coming back. And yeah, I mean, hearing a lot of the new hardcore bands, it's good. It's really good shit, man. Yeah. It's like they've taken kind of what people were doing back then, and it obviously sounds better because of technology. And yeah, there's still that energy, and which kind of makes me miss that drive I had back then, you know? So it's cool to kind of...
Is it more like a job now?
Oh, it is a job. It's not more like a job.
Well, I mean, like, as far as like...
Back then, you know, you could live off $400 a month or whatever, you know. It's like, now I
still live with mom a little bit,
yeah,
and just go on tour,
wives and kids, and you know,
responsibility.
Yeah, lots of responsibility. So yeah. Yeah, it's definitely different.
Yeah. But when you guys were starting out, were you ever afraid that people wouldn't really get it, like the music or anything like that? Like, whether it be too progressive, too technical, or were you always just like, this is what we're going to do and grind it?
I mean, I think
it
was always in the back of our mind, but we didn't... It's not like we were
making... weren't very
high
back
then. Yeah, the stakes weren't high. So
yeah,
it was like,
true.
If it... Like, when we wrote this first few records, it's like, if people don't like it, we'll just figure something else out. We're young. You know, that's what you do anyway when you're young.
I mean, I'll be honest, I'm more concerned about that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
like you said, it is a job. Yeah. So now when we write a record, it is like, man, I hope this resonates with our fans.
Yeah.
So we can tour for 2 more years and back and pay these bills.
Yeah, because if you have 2 years of people not caring,
yeah,
that's
you're
like how,
you're
okay,
kind of
we got to figure out a way to survive for
right.
these 2 years. You know?
So when you're planning and writing for the future, are you trying to... not really appease the fan base, but are you writing for the fan base or are you writing for like new
initially we always write just kind of how we're feeling at the moment, and we kind of analyze, you know, we each write a lot separately and we kind of just see where we are as a band. And like, as much as we try to say like, no, we don't think, you know, this is all for us, blah blah blah, I think it's always kind of in the back of our mind. But I think we, after all these years and as a band, we have a really good grasp of what's good and bad. And I think that's what we've always kind of steered the band with, is just our own opinions of our music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just kind of hope that, you know, what we think is good is still what people think is good.
Right.
You know? But I mean, it's always in the back of your head. Yeah. Like,
and
people.
I think it probably varies from member to member,
yeah,
probably, but like for me, I think the actual creative process is still pretty raw. Like you are trying to just write what you hear in your head, you know, and all that. But I think now there's definitely like this analytical phase where we're like, when you listen back and you're much more critical of it, and you're, you know, we're trimming a lot of fat and that's where you start thinking about things like, how's this going to translate live, you know, or like, is there too much going on, or is there not enough going on? Like, whereas in the old days,
we didn't give a shit.
We were just like, fuck it, let's, you know, like, just do whatever. But I still think, like, the actual, like, you know, when we're just, like, coming up with ideas, that's still, like, a very kind of raw process.
Yeah.
And you are trying to just, whatever music is inside you, trying to sort of get it out. And then it's, like, once you start building the song and stuff, there is definitely much more... self-critique and stuff that goes on. And that's where I think that plays a role, where you're like, are people going to dig this?
Yeah.
You know, as lame as that sounds, you know, it is important, because if they don't dig it...
Yeah.
You ain't doing this.
Yeah.
You're not doing this.
And you lose momentum, or you just, you know, or whatever, so...
And I think now there's a lot of personal pressure that I don't think existed a whole lot in the past. Like, it's cool, we're to a point... as a band now where we have so much trust in each other. And I think that's one of the reasons why we get along as a group so well, is because when it comes down to recording, we almost just let each other do our thing. Like, nobody's ever looking over each other's shoulder. You know, it's just kind of like, but I think because of that, we all have this like personal pressure. Like, I want to do the best that I've ever done. I want to make the dudes happy, you know, I want to make, you know, I want the fans to notice it. So I think that's something that I at least me, I never felt that in the past. I just kind of like, oh, I'll figure this out and just record it. And it is what it is. Where now I'm like, fuck, I really want to like step it up every time.
Cool.
You know, and I think that's from learning from past mistakes, you know, with recording or writing. Like Paul said, like doing too much or not doing enough here or there, or even just, like, on a nerdy level, like recording techniques,
right.
You know, or things you should have done. So, yeah, that's another big difference, I think.
Yeah, I asked that really because it took me personally a while to get into your band. Mm-hmm. It was one of the bands, one of the cooler names that was out around that time. So it just seemed like a cool, I just wanted to like you guys a lot because, you know, you were a heavy one, and I love the band name, which is lame, I know, but still, you know, we were young. And I think around Alaska is when I started to be like, okay, I get it now. You know what I mean? And then Colors came out, and you know, that was, you push play, and then next thing you know, an hour later, the song is done, you know, for the most part. And, those were great albums. And even I steered away from you guys for a little bit just mm-hmm. because, you know, 20 years is a long time. I'm just now in the last, this last year, falling in love with Coma Eclectic. You know what I mean? Like, that, for me, would be, like, my favorite. It was Colors, obviously, because yeah. the whole, you know, you get the Colors album, then you do the re-release, and I watch the DVD a million freaking times, you know? And, yeah, so now it's Coma Eclectic and the newer stuff. So, you know, whatever you guys are doing, it's working, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
we're yeah. not one of those bands, I think. I mean, that's something we've always struggled with, like, in a live setting especially, is I feel like when you see us or hear us for the first time, it's so much, it's so dense and so much going on that you really don't know what to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, some bands, you see them, you hear them for 5 minutes, you get the band. You're like, okay, this is awesome, or this is not my thing. But with us, I think, you know, it requires a little more attention.
You gotta work, you know, the listener has to work out.
Yeah, which I understand that's not for everybody. I mean, but your fan I don't base... have that attention for a lot of music now right. either, you know? So, I mean, the fact that there are people still, like, you know, going back and diving into records that they may not have dove into at some point, you know, it's pretty... You know, it's awesome to hear that, you know, because we get it. You know, I think a lot of bands take offense to that, but it's like, I mean, albums have a lot to do with your life as well. Like, Colors resonates with a lot of people, and I think it's because of the time period and what they were going through. You know, we all have albums that are dear to us,
right.
and it might have something to do with what was going on in our lives at that moment. And, you know, those are things I think bands need to kind of understand and not take offense if yeah. people kind of fall off.
Yeah, everybody talks about Colors.
Yeah.
You yeah. know,
and
is it, would you consider that your breakthrough kind of album?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think we're realistic in knowing that, like, that album, you know, it just had legs. You know, it's really why we're honestly still doing this at this level, because it did resonate with a lot of people, and we got so many miles out of that record, yeah. you know. And you're right. Like, you know, every album we've put out after that, like, I like it. You know, I like...
Yeah.
The Automata stuff more than I like Colors,
because
it's like the most accurate
right.
representation of me and us
yeah.
now, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But like Tommy was saying, like, Colors just, it resonated with a lot of people, and it came out like at the right time, I think, and
yeah.
and you know, it's most likely gonna always be, regardless of what we put out in the future, it's most likely gonna be like most of our fans' like favorite record,
right?
That's where a lot of our fans started.
And you can, as an artist, you can either resent that and be like, well, the news stuff's way better. But I think we're just appreciative of the fact that it had that kind of impact. And, like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I still like playing those songs live because yeah. people get stoked on them. And we probably will always play, you know, that material. Like I said, every song on that album still has legs.
Yeah.
You know, we can bust out any of those live, and they generally always... go over pretty well, whereas, you know, there's songs that we've put out after that you know, go over like a fart in a spacesuit, you know, live, and we still like them, but, you know, they just don't resonate with people
right.
the same way. So rather than, like, I think it'd be unhealthy to, like, be bummed out about that. It's just the way it is, you know, and I think we're okay with that. But at the same time, like you said, you know, people, I think, will still, if they're still casual fans of us, hopefully they will dig into the newer stuff, and it and they'll like it, or it'll grow on them, or,
right.
or whatever.
Well, I think the harder the fan has to work to be into something, whether, I mean, again, not forcing yourself to like something, but we've said it a million times on this podcast, pop music is easy to get, and it's easy to like, but also the life of pop music, or the shelf life of certain songs, is very short.
Yeah.
If you have to dive into something, and you're more invested in it to where, like, you have to learn to like something, maybe, it carries way longer with you,
definitely.
You know what I mean? Plus, you feel like you're part of a cool club because you like this weird progressive death metal band, you know what I mean?
And I think interesting about Colors that I never really even thought about till we did the 10-year thing a few years ago, was that, you know, it is this record that everybody looks at, like, our milestone or whatever, but I feel like at the time, because we still... You know, we always got shit. A band like us that changes drastically, you always get shit from your fan. Like, especially back in the day, like Silent Circus to Alaska, people are like, okay, it's getting a little... But then Alaska to Colors, I remember there was a lot of backlash
right.
when Colors came out. And I think I kind of forgot that, and I think the band in general... And it's funny to think about, there were moments after we released Colors, I was like, are people going to like this record? Like, I remember even the tour we did on the Colors album, like, we were playing... not the best shows, and then it, like, after the fact, it was like, oh, this is the record, you know? And it, so we had to kind of push through the small little window, which, on a creative side, I think that's good for musicians to hear, like, because, you know, maybe somebody's out there that wrote a record that maybe people aren't really feeling, but it might, it could grow into something that becomes, like, what it did. They're identified by.
And I still remember writing Colors. That was the most apprehensive and terrified I've ever been.
Yeah, we were like
even writing it, I was like, dude, this
is because you're trying new stuff.
It's such a departure, and I was like, and it, the writing process was weird. Like, it was the first time, like, Tommy was living in Louisiana then, and like, we were, there was a lot of like sort of remote,
kind of the first
writing
like,
and stuff,
you know,
like that.
Right. Yeah, plus, it's early, like, that's like early, you know, 2006, 2007 times, so it's like not as easy as it is nowadays to do that.
I was used to writing riffs with Tommy and, like, you know, in face to face, you know, the person or whatever. So it was, I remember, like, being, and you're right, that it maybe that is a good, like, a good sign for other musicians that might experience the same thing. Sometimes that's like, you know, if you're feeling that apprehension or nervousness or anxiety about what you're writing, you never know, man. It might be the most thing, like the best thing you've ever written or something. So, but yeah, I remember like writing and recording that. I was honestly terrified. And actually, it wasn't until I think Jamie King heard some of the demos of it and he loved it.
Yeah.
He was like, dude, this is the best thing you guys have ever done. And I remember that like helping me personally. I was like, oh, if Jamie's into it, man, like we'll be all right. You know what I mean? So. But yeah, it was like a terrifying time.
Dad's approval, right?
Yeah.
Let me look through my questions that HQ sent over that I have to ask. So you guys, over the span of, you know, almost a quarter of a century, have toured with a wide variety of bands, whether they be small or astronomically huge. I mean, you did like the mega tour with like Dream Theater and Megadeth, was it? Right?
No, Opeth. It was called Progressive Nation. Opeth. Theater and 3.
Did you guys tour with Megadeth? No.
No.
Never. Like Megadeth tour or something?
Once. No.
I don't really know. I would tour with
that. Being said, what's the band that impressed you most that you have toured with, whether it be like a smaller band or a larger band?
Ooh, man, that's a tough one, man.
That's impossible.
I mean, I love
Dream Theater is big too, especially for like you guys' little avenue. I mean, you guys are very, very talented musician, so I would assume that you respect the shit out of that.
Depends on, like, for me, like, I love Opeth, so touring with them, I mean, they're one of my favorite bands, period. So, like, touring with them was, like, my favorite band, but, like, but, it, you know, then again, it was, like, cool touring with Dream Theater because they're older guys, and, like, they still are in it, you know, like, and I thought that was cool. It almost, like, back, I mean, we're, like, their age. Now,
that was a long
time. Their age was when we toured with them, basically. Yeah. So, or I am anyway. But just seeing like kind of a band that's had that kind of longevity and still have that sort of commitment to quality and excellence, you know, and they practice and they like that. Yeah. That was kind of cool to see and very impressive in its own right. But it's hard to say, man. We toured with so many like amazing bands.
Yeah,
like you said, small, big, whatever. Like.
This current tour is slightly strange for me, looking as an outsider. I had no idea who... Are you co-headlining, or are Kron headlining? Or
Chon's... They're... I don't know. I think on paper it's a co-headliner, but I don't know.
They play last.
Yeah, I mean, not that necessarily matters, but when I went and checked them out, I was like, I wonder how those fans will take the band that plays right before them.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You can definitely tell there's people that probably haven't been exposed to... The kind of music we play,
but even the opener before you guys is more along the line of you.
I mean, that world, that instrumental world, definitely. You know, we're lucky to be able to kind of be amongst that and still do fine. I don't know.
There is some crossover.
There is some crossover,
but yeah, there's definitely.
I mean, like you said, we've done so many different kinds of tours that nothing feels really that odd anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, we toured with Dragon Force. We toured with. we've done.
Toured with Chiodos.
Yeah. I feel like in the beginning, too, the first 10 years, you're just touring with whoever because, like, there's not a lot of people that are touring in the hardcore world in general. And next thing you know, it's like, Stretch Armstrong in Between the Buried Me, you know, whatever. Personal question, how weird or how semi fulfilling or cool was it to play Bonnaroo?
That was awesome. That was a good night.
As a fan of you guys, I had to take time. Plus, I had been to Bonnaroo a handful of times. I was like, what the flip? I was like, that's crazy that you guys would be there. And then, again, seeing you play small clubs at my hometown, Jacksonville, Bunny Fest, things like that, and then going to seeing you at, like, a festival that I would attend regularly, like Bonnaroo, and the massive amount of people that are there, I'm like, fuck, dude, this band is, like... And I thought then you had made it, you know what I mean? And I feel like now you're even bigger and better than then. But it was just cool as a fan to see you guys play such a big stage like that, too.
And cool is... I mean, that's a very, like... You know, as a band, like, that's kind of like a big deal, you know, to play a festival like that. I think that day there was, I mean, Slayer played, but other than that, I think we were the only, like, real metal bands. Paul Bearer played right before us.
There's not a lot of metal, you know, who played right after us
on the same stage, literally right after us?
Who?
Casey Musgraves. So how weird is that?
Yeah.
So, like, just to sort, I mean, it was just almost surreal. Like, obviously she wasn't as huge as she is now, but she was getting there, and, like, just to be in that sort of eclectic, like, environment and to have a full...
Yeah, the crowd was
The crowd was insane. Was good. It was amazing, you know? Like, so,
because you play daytime, you know what I mean? So,
and we're not, like, not to shit on ourselves, but we're not the best daytime band.
Yeah.
So, like...
I think it's hard for a daytime anything, you know what I mean? Especially, like day three, day two of a festival.
Yeah.
I would say fest for us, it's normally, like, either really weird or good, and that was... We lucked out. You know,
it
was
ended up
really
being
good
really
experience.
Cool.
I did happen to catch the next year, I think, or it may have been the same year, but I think it was the next year. Animals' Leaders also played.
Yeah.
And that was cool because again, that's another band. Tobin, the guitar player, Tosin, for that band, I saw him play in his previous band, Reflux, from Georgia, and I stopped him and I was like, "Hey, man, Reflux was cool," and it blew his mind that I even knew that. So. It's cool to see, like, those people progress and become, like...
And the singer of Reflux owns Sumerian Records.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, we'll switch gears onto labels. They seem to be... Sumerian seems to be one of the ones that are doing it right in the last, decade or so. You guys have had a couple different labels you've been on, Victory being one. A lot of people... kind of call Tony, like, the biggest villain of hardcore. But, like, what was the reason for you guys leaving Victory in general to...
Our contract was up. Simple as that.
That's it?
Yeah.
Contract was up. Try something else.
Okay. I didn't know, because, again, he's one of the... You never know.
That's how it was. Same with Metal Blade. You know, people were like, what happened with Metal Blade? It's like, our contract was up. You know, and we want to try something different. You know, every label has their pros and cons, you know, and a band like us that does try a lot of new things and... you know, has been around for so long, you know, we treat the business the same way we treat our music, where we want to experience new things and see if something else may work better for us.
They offer you to stay with them, or do you just...
Who?
Whatever label you're with,
sometimes,
time.
Just like any business decision, whatever makes the most sense for your current situation.
Yeah, and in this world, I mean, you know, the reality, I don't know what the perception is of, like, the average fan or whatever, but when you're kind of in this world, it's like, it's not like there's some sort of financial windfall from signing to X label versus Y label.
Signing bonuses.
Yeah, it's not like, hey, if you sign with us, we're going to give you $5 million. Yeah. You know, like...
Done deal.
It does not happen. Yeah. It's literally just like, you know, we're going to make a living touring. We know that. Like, but it's like, okay, let's try this. Like Tommy said, you just kind of want to... You may want to try something different, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see if maybe this label will help with this one thing that we're like struggling with or whatever, you know. Yeah. Or sometimes it's literally just like, let's just try something different. You know, because
we're in a position now where we can structure deals that are like one, maybe two albums. Where in the past it was like, you know, when you're starting out a band, you're normally signing contracts or like
multiple deals.
Well, you know, our Victory, I think, was four or five albums.
That's why when I thought.
Which was a lot, you know.
It's like LeBron James, dude. He just signs 1-year deals.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I'm LeBron James. I've been at it for a long time.
So you guys like LeBron James is like metal,
huh? Let me
see
what happens with this team.
Yeah, I like that tag.
Maybe he liked it. And then the next year he's like, yo, let me see what's up with this other
team. You know, I want to go play for Lakers. Screw it. Yeah. What was the reason behind the cover album? Because some people think that it was just like to fulfill, obviously,
no,
an album. But then you had two albums after that with Victory.
Yeah,
so.
It's not sexy sounding at all. It literally, I think, it might have been Victory's idea.
What to do what again?
The anatomy of.
Out for a second. Oh yeah, yeah.
LeBron was, because it's something we just kind of talked about. It's, you know, just as Ben, just kind of like, oh, that could be cool. But, and I remember they kind of presented the idea, but it was actually separate from our contract. I do remember that.
Okay, so it didn't go to fulfilling any of those releases.
No.
Cool.
And for us, it was just like, I think at that time we weren't super busy touring, and we're like, eh, it'd be fun.
Yeah,
you know. Let's
and
try
it, it ended up being a lot of fun, and we ended up learning a lot from it.
Yeah, we learned. I feel like
super glad we did that.
It was. I just remember it was insanely rushed.
Oh yeah.
Like even listening to it, my God, it's so rushed every day.
I remember when I first heard it, I was interested to see your take on Bicycle Race.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But then it was. It's basically like you guys just playing all those songs as Between the Bear and Me, not like creating your own cover, like there's no like breakdown in Bicycle Race. That's what I was looking forward to. I was like, I wonder what they're gonna do with these songs and like how they're gonna church them up, so to speak. But they're still a great. I mean,
that's probably my only regret about that record is I wish we did put a little more of our spin on it.
Yeah.
But when I look back, I don't think we were comfortable enough as musicians to be able to do that and it'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like if we did that album now, we could just make it killer.
Yeah.
I don't want to do another record like that. But yeah. I think for what it was...
Yeah, well, like Tommy said, it was kind of rushed.
It was very... I mean, it was a lot of songs.
It was a lot of songs.
And
teens, 20-something? Yeah, something crazy like that.
A lot of stuff.
And I remember we were kind of in over our head time-wise recording, and we definitely had to cut corners. And one, that's part of it all, you know?
One last thing with the Victory thing, or two things before we move on from the label stuff. Were you aware that at some point... I think Tony had talked with Alex, Lamb Goat guy, when you guys left. I guess he kind of, and this is not verbatim, so I'm not quoting anybody, but he along the lines of saying that you guys had peaked commercially and that you'll never be any bigger than what you were with Victory.
Of course he'd say that.
Yeah, which ended up being not true, but
obviously,
you know, man. I mean, people are gonna say what they're gonna say. I mean, I don't.
Maybe it was hurt that you left, you know? Maybe you thought there was still something there with you guys?
I don't have any resentment towards the label or Tony. I mean, in fact, I mean, they were the first, like... I mean, before them, we were on a German record label, Lifeforce Records. Lifeforce. Nobody in the States was remotely interested in what we were doing. And so Victory and Tony, to his credit,
they took
a chance on a band that really... I mean, listening to that stuff, how would you ever think it was going to be commercially viable to begin with?
So, well, maybe it's because after the Colors album came out and, you know, your whole situation with
that. I mean, he has an ego. There's no denying that. And, you know, it's just part of his ego talking. True. I don't know if that was a genuine statement. I'm sure he was upset we didn't stay with him. It's natural.
Do you guys remain, like, do you guys talk? With each other. Okay.
No, but I mean, he's a business. People, you know, he's forever going to be, you know, villainized or whatever. But at the end of the day, I mean, he's a businessman.
Yeah.
Sure, he's very shrewd. I'm sure some of the stuff he does, people would perceive as unethical or whatever. But, you know, we signed the deal. We fulfilled the deal.
Yeah. Moved on.
They fulfilled the deal on their end, as far as we know.
We learned a lot.
Certainly, between all that, maybe some nefarious shit was going on. Maybe not. I have no idea. I don't even.
Maybe care. It wasn't directly with you guys. Maybe of you guys.
Yeah, I don't even care. So, you know, we did it. We finished the relationship and we moved on, and we never even think about that stuff anymore.
And I will say, regardless of, you know, anything we've dealt with labels in the past, we've always, every label we've ever been on, it's given us 100% creative freedom.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I think that's the most important thing. I mean, granted, there's little things that anybody would change about anything, but the fact that they never were over our shoulder about our music, you know, still to this day, we just give labels our albums.
Hmm.
Like, we don't...
There's no imprint
or anything. We don't send them demos. We're just like, here's our record. It's us.
Sell it.
Yeah. Do your job now.
Yeah.
And they've all done that. So,
yeah, we're very lucky in that sense.
Plus, Tony sold Victory for like 30 mil, so.
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, he's good right now.
Yeah, he's fine.
So the husband of Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman's daughter, Isabella.
Hold on, what? You just say Tom Cruise?
Yeah, well, let the man finish.
I couldn't understand.
I also was confused as well when I got the text. So, yeah, I had to. Apparently, Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible Tom Cruise. And
Scientologist
Nicole,
Tom
yes.
Cruise.
Well, I read on...
Is he still one?
He's going to sign us.
Oh. Yes. $30 million deal.
Scientologist. Scientology Records.
No, but apparently Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman have an adopted daughter, Isabella.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The actual father of Isabella is a Between the Buried and Me fan, so can you confirm or deny that Tom Cruise has in fact heard some Between the Buried and Me material?
I have no idea.
I hope so. I hope he's heard it. I mean, well, actually...
What if it gets him pumped before his big stunt
scene?
I would say
he's influenced heavily by it.
Yeah, he certainly is, and he'll probably put our... He'll probably feature us in the next movie, and that's probably when we'll finally get
rich. I think that's...
That's probably going to happen.
100% true?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you'll be on the soundtrack, maybe some cameos in the next Mission Impossible 18 or whatever.
I'm ready for that.
Yeah. What is the best... what's the best Pink Floyd album?
Man.
I think this is an Alex question because he's also a big Pink Floyd fan.
I mean,
I'm not a big super one.
It's probably Dark Side.
It's probably Dark Side. I mean, that's what everybody doesn't want to hear, probably, but it probably is. I mean, it's fucking amazing.
There's a reason why it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. At this stage in your career, what would be the ultimate tour package? Would it be like a headlining tour? Would it be like
Floyd would be on it?
It would be. I don't know.
I have no idea, man.
It would be just us and we play for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
What one song would you play?
I mean, that's tough. I don't know, man. I mean.
Would it be like a tour with like your friends' bands? Would it be like a tour with like mega bands where you would open up for more people?
Yeah, is the criteria like that it's going to be some blowout, like highly attended tour? Is it just for fun?
Yeah, that's
it's just for fun, man. We're just bringing some friends and we're
bring back the red cord.
Bring back the red cord.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
That's a tough question, man. I hate to evade the question, but...
No. Just one that makes you think, obviously, on the spot, too.
Yeah,
so.
I'm bad on the spot. Really bad.
And there'd probably be some... Definitely be some defunct bands on there, I'm sure.
Well... I mean, right now, in general, we have a problem with... There's not a whole lot of bands, like, to tour with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're constantly...
You mean, like, currently?
Yeah, I mean, we're constantly just, like...
Tour with the same bands.
Yeah, it's like, goddamn, we need to find some more bands.
Is that just in the States or Europe and everywhere as well? Same problem?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's just, it's harder now for full-time bands especially. It's harder to be a full-time band now. You know?
Yeah, money, I mean, I'm sure that the money
on the suit side of things, you know, you want someone that brings people in the door every night. You want bands that, you know, it's not exactly like you. There's all these criteria you want to achieve, but there's very few bands that kind of fit within
all
that.
The full-time bands are generally like at the same level
they
are, so it's like who supports who, you know, because if you're any smaller than us, it's likely that you just can't be a full-time band because you just don't make a living. And if you're any bigger than us, like, you're in a whole other world. You know what I mean? So,
or they're like really young and they have the ability to tour. They don't have like responsibilities.
That's why we just, you know, we're just tour with a contortionist all the time or whatever, you know? It's like,
hey, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Great, you know, great band, great people and all that stuff. But yeah, Tommy's right. It's just like, there's just not a ton of bands that tour full time.
And when you're a band like us, the headlines a lot. You're constantly looking for support. And yeah. I don't know, it's tough.
Tough question.
It is a very tough question.
So another tough question. What are five albums that like influenced you greatly?
Oh jeez, we should have mentioned
outside.
More of that.
Outside, we'll do four. We'll do four since you already said the Pink Floyd one. They don't necessarily have to be within your genre too. I mean, obviously, you're all over.
I mean, okay, I'll start. I mean, I have to do Pantera because that's like when I was young. I guess Vulgar.
It was Vulgar for me.
Mr. Bungle, California. Beatles, Abbey Road. What else?
One more.
Radiohead, OK Computer.
There you go.
Siamese Dream, Smashing Pumpkins. Just keeping in the same vein, probably Alice in Chains. Dirt was really big for me.
You see Greg's Derek Kentro.
What?
Last night, or twice maybe.
In LA,
that's amazing. Kind of something that a little more like, well, it's not super current anymore, but I remember when it came out, it was a big, big inspiration for me, was Ghost Reveries by Opeth. I have one more I gotta do?
I think you have one more.
Shit. Yeah.
Good luck.
You took Volgr. Volgr would have
you
definitely.
You can have it.
Yeah, you can do it.
Definitely been one. Honestly, probably Countdown to Extinction. Megadeth.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like guitar, yeah. Kind of riff. Like that was, you know, at a time in my life where I was learning to play and stuff like that. And so hearing those like riffs and Marty Friedman's like lead work, I was like, holy
that
shit.
That was a crazy, in metal especially, that was a crazy moment for production.
The production of it.
Yeah.
Like, I remember even clean. Being a kid being like, holy shit, this sounds like so... Never heard metal sound so clear.
It's crazy, crispy, too, how that's changed over the years. It's like, you listen to... Sometimes when I listen to, like, early thrash metal stuff, like, Metallica, early Metallica stuff, it sounds, comparatively to, like, current production and stuff, it sounds so flat-ish to me. They're, like, it would... I wonder what it would be like if it were recorded currently, now.
I don't know. So.
Production is a whole other, like, conversation we were talking about the other day, how, like, there's so many, like... things that, like, the way things are recorded, there's just, it's such industry standard, like, certain, because everything's done digitally and stuff, everything almost sounds like the same,
mm-hmm,
kind of, it's like everybody's using the same guitar tones, you know, drum tones,
it's weird.
Everybody's quantizing everything.
They want to hit the same mark as the people before.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We kind of missed the days of, like, everything kind of sounding different.
Everybody kind of had
their
own.
Everybody had their own kind of sound and everything, and now it's like, man, everything sounds...
Especially in hardcore. I remember, like, album sounded completely different. And randomly, there would be, like, an album that comes out. I remember, like, a Turmoil record, the first one on Central Media or whatever. I was like, holy shit, sounds insane.
I remember hearing...
Literally Snapcase records.
They're coming back.
Yeah.
That Strife record that sounded like they just put the whole mix through, like, a Boss reverb.
Yeah.
And now, if I was, like, a band put that out now, I'd be like, what the...
Yeah.
What they do? But I remember at the time being like, well, this is different. You know, it sounds different.
So you kind of like it only for the reason that it's different. You haven't
heard
it before.
You know?
Yeah,
it's just like not everything sounded
the same.
You know, they're using different amps and different, you know, and especially some of those old hardcore records, like they were recording it with like engineers who had maybe never recorded
hardcore.
Like,
You know,
this is my living room, guys. Come on in, set your equipment up.
Or recording folk bands or something.
Yeah,
I remember,
like my first band from here on, we recorded with a guy that
never heard anything like
what
heavy for sure.
Music
was. So that probably contributed to some of the like diversity of sounds or whatever. But now it's like people are just making amazing sounding albums. You know, literally in their apartment. You know, it's like. Crazy.
I remember I was in a band previously way, 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 way long ago. We were recording in the same studio that Red Jumpsuit did as well, back home in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Same guy who mixed and mastered their stuff, mixed and mastered ours, but we had, like, you know, hours to do it. They had many, many, many days to do that. I remember when they were recording us and whatnot, they really couldn't, like, they wanted to give us a click track, but they couldn't give us a click track. So they weren't really used to the whole, like, heavy kind of situation,
enough
time stuff.
We didn't record to a click track till Colors.
Well,
yeah. Even the Alaskan shit. Which is,
And the first, the self-titled, we recorded that live in
Five
Jamie's
days,
basement.
Yeah.
Like,
that
was straight up. We tracked all the instruments at the same time.
Yeah.
You know.
Was that on purpose or just because that's how you had to do
like
it then?
That, we didn't, I mean.
We literally, like, left the studio and we recorded all night, left the studio. I had to be at work at fucking 7 in the morning. Like, it was, like, just a week of.
We didn't know.
Well, I only ask because, like, Josh from the Chariot, the first Chariot release was recorded like that on purpose.
They
all got in the room and they recorded it live one take kind of situation.
I don't even remember, like, I think that's just, we thought that's how.
We were limited by.
That's how you're supposed to do it, right?
Whatever Jamie equipment he had at the time or whatever, but I think we recorded on ADAT.
Yeah, we did.
But, you know, if you ISO those tracks, I mean, you hear bleed and, like, you know, all the drum tracks have guitars in them, and all the guitar tracks have drums in them, and all that stuff. So, yeah, it was just, I don't know, that's just how you did it back then.
How much musical training did you guys have prior to being in the band? Or, I would say between the Baird and me, rather than Fred and Clemson.
Differs from person to
like
person.
Are you guys classically trained or
I'm not at all. Paul had a
I had some like I took some music theory classes in high school. so I kind of I knew the language of music, which I always tell people, you know, that's really all that stuff is. It's like it's a great tool for communication. Like Dan and I can communicate in that way, and it maybe helps you have some direction if you're trying to write something and you're like, oh, it's, you know, Phrygian dominant would sound cool over this or something like that. But it's not. That's I'm so far removed from that. Like I don't even think about that stuff anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But like Tommy's totally self-taught. Dusty's totally self-taught. You guys haven't really had any kind of.
I mean, I had a guy that like I'd be like, hey man, show me the freaking Pantera riff.
Yeah, that's know? Not. Like, I wouldn't call that classical.
Yeah, training. Yeah, yeah. No.
I had like the dude I'd go and learn. Yeah. And stuff with, but yeah, I never.
Interesting.
I would say I was some of it was useful in that you know I did some like part of like high school music theory or whatever was, and this is a long ass time ago. So, but I'm like we learned how to like you know part write you know kind of in the Baroque style right. or whatever. So you know even though that was just sort of a blip in my past, I would say it certainly helped kind of like helped me understand how music worked. In a like mathematical way, like harmonies and counter melodies and some chord theory and stuff like that. But again, it was so long ago. It you know, it's kind of ingrained in me now. I don't really think about it, but I guess the knowledge is still there. Mm-hmm. I still know like
it's a founding.
Yeah, it's foundation. Almost like a building block kind of thing. But it becomes like just. You know, so now if I'm trying to harmonize if Jamie's like, harmonize that lead, you know, like I can almost just do it mathematically just by like looking at my fretboard. Like I don't have to like play with the notes until something sounds. I can see. I'm going to harmonize it in thirds.
See, that's weird
opposite,
thing.
I'm singing. I'm like, I need to harmonize it. I'm like, okay, I just got to sit there and figure. I'm like,
find the note. Yeah.
That's why I wonder.
No
vocal coaching, no vocal classes.
A little bit, like later on, like recently, like in probably the last few years.
But like in the beginning, 10 years, nothing.
No, nothing. I mean,
piano classes.
Because all that was just kind of
messing around.
On the first record, I didn't even sing at all. It was just screaming. Our drummer sung at the time. I didn't know how to sing. I mean, I still kind of still just figuring it out. You know,
which is weird because
in keyboards, I just started playing because I didn't know what the fuck to do. When all the instrumental stuff was going on. Yeah, like, for real.
He's like, I'll just play some, you know, pads.
Like, I got this, and I was like, oh, it's a cool way to make noise. And for Silent Circus, there was, like, a lot of parts. I was like, oh, I'll just put a lot of distortion on this thing and go wild.
That's crazy.
And it, like, slowly evolved into, like, oh, I... Okay,
now
I
we can. Have songs that are straight up built on, like, keyboard riffs.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And the guitar becomes
and some
the
of the best ones, even though they might, you know, like, the beginning of Colors, that's an amazing track. You know, the intro-ish song or whatever you want to call it. Part A. But, no, weird that you say that because even before, like, Alaska and Colors and stuff like that, you're one of the only screamer kind of band leadmen, frontmen that I would want to have singing more just because I felt like that your voice was very fitting for all that.
Yeah.
And, I was just like, why doesn't he sing more? Does he not know that he has a good voice? I don't know, but
listen
that makes
to Thomas
sense.
Giles.
Plug it.
Yeah, I don't know. My thing with you know BTBM is always just the right voice for the song and part and what's going on lyrically. Yeah, it depends. It differs. I kind of approached it. I tried to sing more with like the Coma stuff. Like I approached vocals very differently for that record. But I think because the music. It catered to it a lot more. So it really just depends on the part. Yeah, but I've always kind of, I mean, even like recently, like when we did the evening with in Europe, we kind of revisited Reaction, which was on Silent Circus, which is like kind of an ambient track. I mean, it's weird like listening back to that because it was so different for us at the time, but it's like once we started playing again, I was like, this sounds like something I would write right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's weird.
Did you ever impress yourself?
That
like
was kind of. No, it wasn't really impressed. I was just like, it's weird. That was kind of in my DNA, and I didn't even really realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just more comfortable with that part of me, you know. And
sometimes when I revisit old stuff that like bands that I would do, I was like, man, you know, at the time, you know, because after you mess with something for so damn long, and then
you
play
don't
it,
revisit
you like,
all,
I don't like it, I hate it. Then years go by, and you listen to it, and you're like, damn.
I mean, I do that with the band. I mean. you know, if we're doing a song that we haven't played in forever on a tour, and I'm listening to it, and I'm like, man, this is a good album or a good song. Like,
yeah, know, there's like, yeah. One thing, like, for me, it's like, stylistically, as a guitar player, I'm like so much different than I was, like, self-titled, but yeah. Like, but yeah, when we play like More Myself to Kill or something,
mm-hmm.
I would find myself being like, damn, I can't believe I wrote that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, impress yourself a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Like, pretty good. I can, myself, you know, I can almost like tell, like, I can, yeah. It almost is like, I can remember back where I was back then, and I was like, I can't believe I came up with that. That's kind of mm-hmm. not too shabby.
What's your average set time, like, when you play a show? Like, not set time, length.
Length? I mean, if we're headlining, normally between an hour 15 and an hour and a half.
Like, what's your ideal? Like, what would you want to have?
20 minutes.
In and out?
Nah.
Leave them wanting more, you know?
Hour 15 always feels
good.
Like
hour 15 feels good. Yeah. I mean,
we're doing, like, an hour 5 this tour. It's, yeah. It feels great.
I asked because I want to know.
We did over 2 hours, and it was crazy. But that set, that set was structured really well. Like, it felt good.
Yeah.
Like, there was never a moment where I was like, okay, it's time to fucking go.
But yeah, that's also like a revisit, you know, like you're saying, you're revisiting like yeah. all your past catalog and stuff like that. Yeah. And obviously doing some newer stuff too.
Yeah.
But I ask that because you guys obviously do write very lengthy tracks at times. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, like, how do you guys choose songs to fit within that time
set that's
constraint.
Shorter than an hour is kind of challenging first, yeah.
And how do you decide on which tour to do what songs?
Well, we first of all always try to do different sets for every tour, which is sometimes crazy. Like, we just did that 2 hour plus set in Europe, and we're only playing what, one song from it this tour.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like you basically just have to wipe your brain and start over. I mean, a lot of it really just starts of just through email, people sending like, oh, we should do this, this, and this. And then,
yeah, do you like, ask the fans and poll the fans?
Not
and stuff?
Really. I mean, we have before. But, I mean, for us, the main concern is we treat our sets like we would an album. You want it to have flow. You want it to, you know, have peaks and valleys. And there needs to be, like, you know, the certain moments have to be really energetic and not energetic and, you know, come out with a bang, in with a bang, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It just kind of happens. I mean, yeah, Dan's really good at like segues and transitions, and yeah. You know he was really critical with the Evening With stuff, especially with that. And yeah, I don't know, we just can't do it, man. We don't when we sit down to do it, we're not like, oh my god, how are we gonna do this? We just, you know, we're just like, oh, what about these songs? And then we add it up, and we're like, okay, this is, we need to cut this or add that, or yeah.
Are we gonna see an autodidact on the set back again?
Oh man,
yeah, we haven't played that in a long time.
Haven't played that in a while.
I love that. I love that breakdown. That's why.
Yeah,
I
that's
ask,
a good
yeah.
breakdown.
That's a
very
good
one.
Is that? But the bam, bam, bam,
yeah. Yeah, that one probably actually would still do pretty well live. Maybe. I don't
Is
know.
It hard relearning your stuff for tour?
Yeah. Sometimes, like a song like that, I have to relearn from scratch. I don't remember. I'd have to literally, you know.
See, it's opposite for me. Like the older stuff is really easy to relearn for me because it's mostly just, you know, screaming, maybe some keys here and there, maybe a singing part, but. Like, it's harder for me to be like, all right, we're going to play this random song off Coma. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I got to pull up the files, how to fucking play all this
yeah,
shit.
Do you have to look up the lyrics and, like, I don't know, have your music tabbed out for you and stuff?
The old stuff, I'm like, all right, yeah.
Probably because you've been doing it for the older stuff.
These guys have
done it longer.
Learned a million and a half
years. I mean, most of the newer stuff we have tabbed books for, which I use to learn them. But, yeah, the old stuff, like, dude. But, you know, it's weird. Like, sometimes it does come back. Like, you learn, like, one riff, and then all of a sudden, like...
Muscle memory kicks right in.
Memory kicks in or something, and you're like, oh, okay, I kind of, you know, remember the next part or whatever, but I always dread the hell out of it. You know, when these guys are like, we're going to play, you know, let's play what, such and such. And I'm like, come on, man.
That was funny. We had when we did More Myself this last tour, there was moments we were kind of... just going back and forth and like, is this kind of
yeah
right?
We actually have videos going between me, Dusty, and Tommy,
just like,
is it this riff?
Yeah,
it's like this.
And
you
I'd
sure
be like
this?
I'd be like, I think I got it, and then I'd like video self and play it, and then they'd
be like,
yeah, I think that's it.
Each video was like progress towards the end.
Yeah,
like it wasn't right, but it was like a moment, a little piece that was right.
I mean, the recording is not very clear. It's like listening to it, I'm like, man, I can't tell.
Yeah,
you can't tell what note that is.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, then eventually I think we got it.
It sounded right.
We played it pretty close. So, but yeah.
So to round it out,
So we'll let you go here in a little bit.
I just want to kind of shoot you some quick questions that people were asking on our Instagram and whatnot.
Rapid fire.
Yeah, not necessarily going to have to think too much about it. Your least favorite, I'm sorry, your favorite slash least favorite album touring cycle.
Ooh. Hmm. Shit.
I'll don't have to be go. The same, obviously, yeah. You could be different.
Never mind. I would say the Colors Tenure was a favorite, for sure.
Yeah. We made a lot of fucking money on that tour. No, I'm just kidding.
That one was
100% my favorite because it was like it was very invigorating to see. I was like, man, dude, all these people care about this record so much. It was very
least favorite.
Motivating. Least favorite might have been this last one.
No, I would say least favorite is whenever we do a support tour with just a crowd that just give a shit about us. Yeah, that's. I can't even think of an example.
Like if you were to play with like a band like
Five Finger Death. Children of Bodom's crowd didn't really like us.
Right.
I remember that pretty vividly. Yeah.
Coheed and Cambria's fans didn't really care for us. Yeah. I love that band.
But I feel like you guys fit band. In though yeah. a little bit
yeah,
with that.
We fit in, but it was just, you know, we're human beings, man. Sometimes when you're on stage and you just look out there and there's just people straight up bummed out, you know, it's...
Well, Coheed also has that, like, mall core kind of fan base, too, a little bit, that, you know, because they are, like, I don't want to say a Hot Topic band, but they are available in Hot Topic.
Of course, very accessible. Very
so, you know, it is what it is.
I enjoyed touring with them, and they're very nice guys.
Oh, definitely,
Yeah, no disrespect. I like that band.
We're literally talking about them.
I think they're fantastic. Just the on-stage experience was a little... I mean, even, like, that Dream Theater tour, as amazing as that was, like... Their VIP crowd, which is mostly like 50
older dudes, older people,
and we're up there screaming and all kind of, and they're just, you know, they're right in the front. Those are the first people you see, and they're just,
I can't understand anything you're saying.
Absolutely bummed. Yeah. You know what I mean? So,
and that was like right at the beginning of where those worlds started to kind of like come together.
Yeah.
Like, yeah,
back then, there wasn't really screaming, like, mixed with, you know...
Especially bands like that. Yeah. Big bands.
Yeah, shout out to Mike Portnoy for even like, putting that bill together. Yeah. It's like, that was, like...
It was very weird at that
time. When it was originally announced, I was like, huh.
Yeah.
So I remember that way back in the day. Yeah. This one's for you, Tommy. We kind of already touched a little bit of it, but did you ever want to completely venture away from screaming in Between the Bear and Me?
No. No, there's never been time.
And if you want more singing, obviously, Soul Aside Projects.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, it's all about finding the voices, you know, just another part of the instruments that, you know, you need to make the correct choices to make it sound cool. And
I mean, there's always, you know, there's always going to be an aggressive element to the music we write.
You know, I still like aggressive music. You know?
Yeah, it's part of the whole, you can't, you gotta
have
it.
It's part of our sound, too, you know, I mean, I mean, I hope to think my scream is like a big part of, you know, the BPM sound. Yeah, I feel like it needs to be there.
Cool. Silent Circus 17th anniversary shows next year.
People are going to start doing like half, 18 and a half years.
Yeah. Well, we joke that we should do a Colors reunion tour every year. You know.
Again, making money, you know what I'm saying?
But
then eventually nobody comes out anymore.
Yeah, like, shit. I guess we've
records are
milked that teat.
Yeah.
No, 17.
20 maybe?
Maybe, I don't know.
Who
knows? Favorite Rocky movie?
We're probably the wrong guys.
Yeah.
We can skip that one. I don't know. Maybe if you were Rocky fans, I just didn't know.
The one with the Russian dude, probably. Which one was that?
Three, maybe?
Is that the
four?
Is that four, really? I don't know.
No.
That's the one I probably saw most recently.
Right, yeah, that's probably, yeah.
Given the dual releases last year, when will we, the fans, hear new Between the Bear and Me records?
Sometime in the future.
In the 2020s.
In the future?
Yeah, I don't know. It's very early stages right now.
As you can tell, we're trying to be very
discreet.
There's no mystery anymore. We've been doing the same cycle since 2000.
It's like every 2 years kind of
thing. You tour, then you write a record, come out, and then you tour. It's Groundhog Day just in years.
Yeah. Still vegan / veg?
Yeah.
Still doing it.
Yeah.
It's cool. JP wants to know why Emir's not on the tour.
Why who?
Emir?
They turned it down.
Oh, yeah, they turned it down.
I think that's just like a lamb goat joke.
Yeah.
Let's see here if I've covered all of those. Yeah, that's basically it. Cool. Well, that was a great time, everybody.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so thanks for being on. Anything that you want to kind of...
How long has Lamb Goat been going on?
Well, as long as you've been around.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I remember...
99, maybe, a little before then.
Lamb
about 20
used
years.
Love us, man, back in the day, dude. Self-titled days, they fucking loved us.
You mean, you mean the users?
Yeah.
No, we're talking about you.
Yeah, well, I already admitted I didn't really like it then.
No, back then, I like this. Now I feel like we get slammed.
No, I feel all right on Lamb Goat.
Are we good? I don't know.
I feel like
there's
we get
hitting
slammed.
This. Yeah, okay. It's hitting this. But I mean, it's again the trolls. Yeah, it's the troll culture.
I back it.
But
I love reading mean shit about us online. I don't know, man. It's like entertaining to me.
Well, we had thought, because one of the things that we do now is we kind of collect some comments about what people have said about the band, so to speak, and then we kind of like read them to you and let you like mean tweets by Jimmy Fallon.
Okay, yeah.
So it's kind of like that. But there's so many articles on you guys on Lamb Goat that it was hard to like comb through
them
all.
There's so many bad comments.
Well, that
so
too.
They couldn't go through.
Yeah. Well, I did have one on the Instagram. Why do you guys suck?
Because from day one, that was one of our biggest goals was to suck for 20 years.
And to so be able to suck for 20 years is
a feat.
Let's
see if we can make a living sucking.
Yeah.
And we have. So
a lot of people have. So anything else you guys want to like end on? Like plug?
Nah,
coffee business? Solo project? Be on the lookout for New Glass Casket in 2030?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Do you guys think Prayer for Cleansing would have lasted as long as you guys have?
No.
Do you think it could have survived the lull?
I doubt it, man. I don't know.
I don't.
Gosh.
Yeah.
It's just there's two different genres in general.
Yeah,
so
yeah, because when BT Band started, we like initially were like wanting to experiment and be like, we want to be heavy, but we want to like try some different shit. I don't know if Prayer would have ever done that.
Tommy,
like we have
and
a jazz scene on the first record.
Yeah.
I don't know if we would have done stuff like that.
Thank you for reminding me. If Tommy and I stayed in Prayer for Cleansing and kept that band going, it would probably just sound like Between the Buried and Me now.
Interesting.
Because we were the same people. We were writing the music and stuff. Like, it just would have, I don't know. It would have.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't know.
What causes those breaks? And this is the last thing I'll ask you before we cut you off, because we already kind of cut you loose a little bit. But what brought on the elements of like you guys writing a song and then going like, hey, let's get some like weird jazz quartet sound, let's get some like weird samba sound, samba sound.
To us, and we hadn't heard it a whole lot. You know, we liked a lot.
Were you worried that wouldn't go over well at all?
At that point, we didn't care.
Yeah, okay. We didn't care though. You know,
I mean, the early days, like we said,
you sucked anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at those days, like you said earlier, there wasn't much on the line.
Yeah, stakes were low. I mean, we started doing some like with Colors, like, you know, Answer the Sky has the like bluegrass section and stuff like that. But that was more of like an experiment in like, you know, basically almost universalizing like music in a way, because like, you know, it was like I was into power metal at the time. Yeah. I kind of had that power metal thing. And then I was like, that chord progression played in the open position sounds like a country bluegrass progression. It's the same shit, you know? And I was like, let's do a version of it in that format. And then like, let's do it again later where we harmonize lead and do a key change, you know, and all this stuff. So we were just, like Tommy said, we weren't afraid to like experiment. And the fact that
it's fun, still to this day, you
can't take yourself too seriously, I don't think. And also like just as musicians, there's like this curiosity to do everything. Because I listen to bluegrass music, you know, at the same time that I was listening to like Dragon Force,
it definitely
fucking Blind Guardian, you know. Yeah. I was still listening to, you know, Ralph Stanley and shit. So it's like, you know, these are things that I enjoy. Why not?
It lets you stand out
creatively and almost try to show ourselves and other people that like, hey, you can do this. Yeah. It's a blank canvas, man. You can do whatever you want.
Throw anything to the wall, whatever sticks.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to stick to a certain formula.
The couple tracks, or the track on Alaska, I believe you guys, was one of the first times I heard that. Might have been on Colors, actually, now that I think about it. But you guys did, you reverted from like whatever your normal Between the Buried and Me sound is to like something like completely off the wall. And it always stuck out. And then you guys continue to do it with other albums, and I think it just makes you stick out even that much more, and that is what it is, you know?
Yeah. I think, was it Laser Speed that was on Alaska?
Yeah.
That was my, I wrote that when I was a senior in high school.
I forgot that, yeah.
It's like my senior exit project, you know?
So when you recorded it, like, years and years later?
Yeah, just like, I was like, because I think I found, like, the musical chart for it or something in my mom's closet or something. I was like, holy shit. And I remember thinking, some of these ideas are kind of, like, pretty cool. You know, let me soup it up a little bit and
yeah, I wish we would have, like, turned it into something more than just like a...
I know, like, almost like a sort of interlude track or ending track or whatever. But yeah, so, you know.
Well, kudos High School Paul for writing that. It wasn't horrible. Was it framed in your mom's closet?
It wasn't framed. It was probably in a fucking ball. You know, it was probably crinkled up. You know, probably had like cat shit on it or something. But
cool. Yeah. All right. Well, again, we already did the last word, so we'll just cut it here.
Peace. Thank you.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMNS.
It wasn't just a radio station. It was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolate.
Get down! The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMNS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.